The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, I'm Evelyn DeLucia. I live in White Plains, New York, and I listen to Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 367 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show today, of course, is Michelle Scribner-McLean and Chris Eliopoulos. And Michelle and Chris and I continue our conversation with Sean Astin as we talk about his experience with the Ironman competition of 2015. And we'll also talk about Run Third. So let's pick up the conversation as Sean has just finished the swimming leg of the Ironman.
So, I mean, you got to peel the, your cap off and your earplugs and the nose, and you, as you're running down the lane, you got to grab your bag. There's like 2,700 bags or 2,200 bags or whatever it is, and you know where yours is. And that's the cool thing about having a celebrity slot, because they want to photograph it. So my bag was in the best position. My bike was in the best position. It was like totally cheating. But and then you go into this tent, and there's all these people there to help you. You know, it's like they start, once you've, they hand you towels, they do this, they do that. Once you're ready, they smear sunscreen all over you. You know, you got to put your helmet on. You got to get your goggles ready. There's no music on the course. That's not allowed. So that was one of the hard things about training, because I didn't train with music for 5 months. You know, from Boston Marathon on, I didn't use music.
So, Sean, why was I under the impression that you cannot be helped? So you can't be helped in the transition areas, but you can after you've gotten your stuff together. They can help you with like the extra stuff, like the sun lotion. Am I just wrong, or?
Well, they can't help you on the course.
Okay, but they can help you.
When it comes to the pros, yeah. I don't know if the pros aren't allowed to touch anybody.
Okay.
But I don't know. The elites may have their own rules.
Like, I've seen these videos of Iron Man with the person coming, you know, the last few hundred yards, and people cheering them on, and I don't know. I thought you weren't allowed to, but that may be different than
the
sun.
Well, I've seen things. You know, if you watch the Iron Man show every year, the NBC show, it's really two shows. The first half of the show, or first two thirds of the show, is the competition to win the race, mm-hmm. and you know, they follow the person in sixth who just made a pass up to fifth place, and you know, and if they crash on their bike, if they fall down and skin their knee when they're running, or hit their head when they're running, people can come up to them and ask them if their day is done, but they can't touch them.
Okay.
Once they get touched for medical stuff, they're done.
Got it. Okay.
But the second half of the television show is the people who, you know, finish at 11:59 at night. You know, the cutoff is midnight. If you don't finish at midnight, you're done. You spent, you know, whatever it is, 17 hours, 18 hours on whatever, 15 hours. What is it? 15 and a half. 17 hours is the total event. You're not allowed to go slower.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's heartbreaking. You know, somebody crosses at 12:01, and it's like the guy doesn't say you are an Ironman.
Mm. Wow.
So, but those people, if they fall down and they stand up, you know, and somebody, they put their arm around somebody and they help them walk. No, you know, what are they going to, they're not competing for anything.
Right.
So, but you know, it's like no assistance in forward momentum. That's the basic concept. But in transition for what they call the age groupers, which are the body of the group that's doing it, you know, like I said, there's, when you come in from the bike, they have trash cans full of ice water, and they dip these big towels in ice water and they wrap them around you. But all right, I'll do biking for you.
Okay.
I'll try and do biking faster than I did swimming. Basically, I won't go through the whole training thing, but Paul Buick, the guy who coached me, I actually found a way. I flew out to Hawaii in August to do 4 days of training with him and Sarah Piampiano is the professional's name. And there's a couple others they have, but Sarah's really who we stayed in the same house, and we trained together. And if I wouldn't have done that 4 days of training, I would not have been able to successfully complete the biking. Mm. I'd done enough riding in the hills around where I live that I was strong, but there's no technique at all. Mm. So it was like, and he would teach me these little things, and you know, it's unbelievable how one tiny piece of information can just fix everything. Mm. And make everything better. So that when I got back to training in Malibu, and I would ride from almost the Santa Monica Malibu barrier all the way up to farm country in Camarillo, and then I'd do like 2 or 3 hours around the farms in Camarillo and then come back again, and it'd take an hour to get out there. So, you know, these big 7-8 hour rides and stuff where you're just putting in miles, and there's some steep hills going up and down to get out there. And when I was training on my own, you know, it was just like watching a snail. And after, there was a couple of times after Paul's training where I almost didn't even notice the hills.
Hmm.
I just flew through them. Just certain pedaling techniques, certain steering techniques, when to get up, when to get down, how your body's working. You know, the guy gave me, you know, just this incredible crash course in cycling during that week. And I trained. But anyhow, so the night before the race, we're at the Purple Patch house, Matt Dixon's house, where he's got all the purple. There's like 18, 19, 20 Purple Patch athletes. And a few of them are going to try and win the race. a few of them are, you know, going to try and place in the top 10. And then there's a few that are in the middle of the pack, and then a couple of them are slower like that. And then there's me. like the celebrity blimp that's going to be floating behind them. And now at this point, I've dropped 15 pounds. I've clearly put on a ton of muscle. My shoulders, when I would walk into like recording sessions for shows and stuff, people would go to give me a hug and they're like, geez, Sean, God, look at your shoulders. You're like ripped. And my legs look like something out. My legs were incredible. My legs are my best feature. Let me just tell you that. My legs are my best feature. And stomach, gut never goes away. Not quite sure. Never goes away. No matter how right. And I had Exos, this company, when I first started with them, like in May, they did a full-on diagnostic with me, CO2 whatever, and max, and we did a whole blood panel, and we did all this kind of stuff, and they figured out my food typing, and we hired this company that would deliver, a food delivery company that would deliver the food to the house, and all I had to do was eat. And they, based on how many calories I was burning, it was like, they came in these little bags. You've seen these little bags before where you open it up and there's the ice bricks are in there, and then they've got the little, yep. You know, your omelet, you know, your little omelet that you open up and you stick it in the microwave and it tastes rubbery and stuff. But anyhow, they would bring me, it was like, oh, that's like 1.5 full cows. Like, it's like, I cannot physically eat that much food. And they're like, well, you have to be eating this kind of calories. You're burning these kind of calories or you're going to get hurt. So I never was able to fully do what they wanted me to do, but I had clearly put on many pounds of muscle and taken off many pounds of fat, and net reduction 15 pounds. Wow. So I was like way better. And like in some of the pictures, I look kind of chunky, like on race, like in the days leading up to it. And I think there's like, I don't know, that commercial talks about cortisol or stress or something like that. So that might have been it. But anyway, I get there and and he says, okay. He's talking about the bike ride. He's giving an overall course thing, and he gives you every detail about what it's like in the transitions and when you're passing through, for example, when you're riding your bike and you pass through the this aid stations, and they're like X number of yards long, and so how you prepare for the aid station, literally like how you take your bottle out, how you drop it, because you drop it. Hmm. And you have to drop it within the aid station or else it's a penalty. And I didn't get any penalties. I was pretty happy about that. But you can get like a 3-minute or a 5-minute penalty if it's assessed at the next little tent that they have. You have to like just sit on the side of the road waiting for your penalty to go up. So, which I probably would have liked. But anyhow, there's, and he was saying interesting things like Coca-Cola. Everybody knows that, you know, carbonated beverages, anything with, you know, corn syrup is toxic. It's like poison. It's not food. It's horrible for you. Well, Matt is like, you know, in August, he started training me on drinking a little bit. And he's like, listen, when you do your ride, at the end of the ride, when you've got like, you know, 15 miles left, 20 miles left, drink a Coke. It's that pure sugar. That's what your body wants. Drink a Coke. Mm. And I was like, it took me time to like acclimate to it. But anyway, so the night before, he's like, if your leg, when you come out of the water, you may be nauseous. You're going to be a little like seasick almost. You've been in the water for an hour and a half. Your equilibrium is messed up, so you may throw up. He goes, drink soda. He goes, it's going to be 105 degrees plus, and with the humidity, it'll feel like even more. So when you go through the aid station and if you feel a little faint, drink Coke. He goes, when you're going up a hill, drink Coke. And basically, you're like, am I basically just going to live on Coca-Cola for my whole life? And he goes, that's your salvation on the during the Ironman, drink Coke. Hmm. And I'm like, you know, but you got to be smart. Don't get bloated. And he goes, if you're feeling bloated, drink Coke. If you're feeling, you know. Wow. So, and the other thing, he goes, there's some non-negotiable things. Eating every 15 minutes, drinking every 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Eat 15 minutes, drink 15 minutes. Or whatever the interval was. Maybe it was 20 and 20 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But he goes, and the truth is, when you do that, you don't get tired. Hmm. No matter how hard you're pumping, no matter how far you go, you don't get tired. You just can keep going. So, I mean, you get tired, but so anyway, so the other thing he says the night before is when you're coming back, you know, you made the turn at Javi, which is the halfway. You've climbed this unbelievable climb. It's the only real big climb in the thing. And it's a make or break feeling. But then you turn around and you've got a downhill. You're going, you know, 50 miles an hour downhill and you're just trying to keep the bike from exploding on you. You know, not 50, but fast, maybe 38, 40 miles an hour, which, when you're on a bike with really thin tires and you're going 25 miles an hour, it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
So, but anyhow, at least when you start. So so he goes, okay, when you're coming back, all of a sudden you're going to see at a certain point the air traffic control tower for the airport. He goes, that means you're 30 miles out.
Wow.
He goes, you know, or 25 miles out, something like that. He goes, now's when I want you to start thinking about the marathon.
Hmm.
Now's when they want you to... You know, now you just got to start getting your brain ready. He goes, so nobody ever won a triathlon by racing 100 miles an hour into the transition at the bike. You know, when you're getting in, stretch a little, stand up in the saddle, stretch your legs, bend over, stretch your back a little bit, move your shoulders, move your fingers. He's like, you're about to run a marathon. So get yourself ready for it. You don't want to all of a sudden be like, oh, I'm in the middle of a marathon course. Unless, and then he looks at me and the group of people.
Oh, no.
And he goes, Sean, if you feel like you're not going to make the cutoff, it's no longer, it doesn't matter about your transition, because if you don't make it by 5:30, you're done. So you pedal harder than you have ever pedaled in your entire life. You pedal like you're going to, like your life depends on it. You know, you pedal. He goes, and that'll be that. That's plan B, Sean.
He said it just to you in front of all these people.
Well, yeah, I became the kind of, you know, the comic relief for the group.
Oh, boy.
So the ride is good. It's hard. It's so hot, but I trained in the heat, so I wasn't worried about the heat too much. I was definitely, you know, hydrating, you know, pouring what you get to the aid station, and I would go slow. They give you bottles of, like, ice-cold water. Pour it all over your head, drop the bottle, grab another bottle, pour it all over your chest, drop the bottle, grab another one, pour it on your legs, drop it. You know, and you're feeling like you're cooling down the whole system. The whole thing is core temperature.
Mm.
That's the whole, you hear that all the time. Like, if your core temperature gets at a certain level, then it won't ever go below it without, like, a long rest. So that's what knocks people out of the race, is that their core temperature gets too high and they faint, or they just can't continue. So keep your core. You got to hydrate. So anyway, so I get up to Javi, and there's these cool things where you pre-place. On the night before, you go in with five plastic bags full of stuff. One plastic bag has your bike helmet, bike shoes, bike gloves, all that kind of stuff. The other one has your, you know, running shoes, running shirt, whatever. And then two of them have food or whatever else you need. They call it a special needs bag. You know, if for whatever you might need, if there's medicine, if there's food, if there's whatever. And then they pre-position it. They go out in the middle of the night in these trucks, and they pre-position it. You know, one is at the 18-mile marker on the marathon, and the other is at the 56-mile marker halfway. Is that the, yeah, 56-mile marker at the bike. So I get to the halfway mark, I grab my bag. You know, while you're riding, they see your number as you're approaching it. They call it out, and then it's incredible what these volunteers do. They just put on such an amazing show. I mean, they just it feels like when you're a little kid and you watch a movie about what the Super Bowl is like or what the World Series is like and how the gum is all lined up and all the jerseys are lined up, and that's exactly what it feels like. It's like everything is world class, just top of the world. You know, I can't imagine now going and doing like a normal one, because now I got to do the best one. But anyhow, I open it up. The sandwich is like crap. You throw the sandwich in the ditch space that you do. But, you know, like you, there's a certain area where you can throw your stuff, like I said. So anyway, now I'm riding, and I've navigated the hills, the tough spots where I train, and I'm doing great. But I look up, and I see the airport. Actually, maybe even before the airport. I put on this thing where the Garmin, you can get a clip where you actually pull the face of the watch off. You pull the whole watch off, like a clip, and then you mount a clip on the bike, and you clip the watch into the bike, so you can actually, instead of having to roll your wrist over to look at all your data the whole time you're going, you can be looking at it in front of you, like without having to move. So I'm looking down now. There's so much salt. You're sweating so much, and there's so much salt in your eyes that your eyes are kind of stinging. And the way I had set up the interface with my watch was, because you can do different things, just the time, just the M miles per hour, or a split. You can look at a split screen where you're looking at your pace and your mile, whatever it is. So I had set mine up with four squares. So each of the pieces of information is smaller on the face of the watch because it's fitting four squares of information. You know, the overall time, the actual clock time, pace, and average per mile or something like that. When the clock time, the elapsed time, every time it gets 59 minutes and it goes to 60 minutes, it adds another digit in the top left-hand corner. So for me, it was the bottom right box, and in the top left corner of the bottom right box, you would see it 4. I've been riding for 4 hours. 5. I've been riding for 5 hours. But at this point, I couldn't read it. I wear glasses, and I didn't compete with my glasses on, and the sweat and like salt is in my eyes, and I'm looking at the thing, and I'm like, I can't read it. So I can't tell if it's a 7 or an 8. And
oh,
at 8 hours, you have a half hour left if you got in the water at 2 hours and 20 minutes. Well, I got in the water at 1 hour 45 minutes, so I probably have 9 hours. But if it's 8, like, you're doing all this math in your head,
wow.
And I'm like, I'm an English major, I'm not a math major. So, so I'm looking at it, and I get this feeling like, oh my God, it's just coming up on mile 8, and you know, I'm like,
or 5 hour 8.
Minutes, so yeah. I probably have 50 minutes. And now I look at the airport tower, and it's Plan B. I'm in Plan B. I'm not in adjust, you're going to be fine, you know, get yourself ready for the marathon mode. I'm going to get knocked out of this race, and I'm going to be embarrassed, and I'm going to be a quitter on NBC. And like, so I start pedaling, and I am just killing it. You know, I'm passing people going uphill. It's so hot, you know, and I'm killing it. And finally, you get back into town, into Kailua, and you make the right turn, and you go down the hill, and it's so great to have a downhill, and you're going downhill, and then you make the right turn, and all of a sudden, like, you know, a tenth of a mile or maybe 2/10 of a mile beforehand, the sides all of a sudden have the banners on them, you know, that let you know you're in the chute, you know, and the crowds now are massive. Because when you're out on they call it the Queen K Highway, and it's, you know, 100 miles, it's like 110 miles on the Queen K Highway, and it is the big island. This is what's so beautiful about it. The big island of Hawaii was destroyed by volcanoes, like, recently. And you're riding through these lava fields.
Wow.
And there's something so beautiful about how there's just nothing but rock and, like, blackened, gnarled rock. And you're like, but you're on asphalt embedded in this lava rock, and the sun is 105 degrees. So you're like, I don't know how the tires don't pop. So anyway, so I come down, and I go into the chute, and you unclip. The pros unclip, like, I don't know, way beforehand, so they're almost running before while they're still going 5 miles an hour. It's unbelievable. But all the volunteers are there to catch the bike. They catch your bike, and then you go running. And the way they had it written on this, the transition was like 100 yards. It was far. So, and what I was really smart about was taking my bike shoes off. Because of my Achilles, it's always an issue with me. The bike shoes have these square clips on the bottom of them, so walking on them is like, you know, it's awkward, clip clop, and you're like going up and down and up and down. So I took them off and I ran with them. But when I got there, I'm talking to the guy, how much time? And he's like, and I've beaten all these people on the bike, and I'm like, they're so screwed. And I'm like, how much time? He goes, it's like 4 o'clock. I thought
what time
I had
you,
to be,
what time do you think
I had
it was?
To be finished. Well, you're done at 5:30. I thought I was racing to get in
under the wire.
I thought I was going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like an hour and a half faster than I thought I would be.
Wow.
And the coach, he finds a way to meet up with you, and he was like, Sean, wow, like, you know, your swim time was really solid. Like, we were really impressed with the swim time, but that was like for you, galactic.
You know,
that was incredible. So I go. Now the start almost comes to an end. I go through the transition, and now I'm like, I don't need to do a 9-minute transition. I can take 15 minutes. You know, right. I'm an hour and a half faster than I thought I was going to be. If I run my slowest marathon ever, it will have just gotten dark, and I'll be like golden. So it's like better time than I could have hoped to do. Like I had predicted, you know, that my range would be something like 14:45 to, or like 15. I can't remember what my exact prediction was, but or it was like 15:15 to 16:30 or something like that. 15:30 to 16:15, like a 45-minute window I gave myself based on my training times and everything. I can't remember the exact time, but anyhow. So they put these ice things on you. I actually went to the bathroom. You know, I got my running clothes on, dried off. Okay, ready to go.
Wow.
So I start running, and I'm like, before I get out of the chute, I'm thinking, I don't want to do this.
That was your easiest thing, too.
I've just gone 7, 8.5 hours of, like, really, really hard exercising, and now I'm starting a full marathon. I'm like, oh, my God. So, and I get out, and my wife and kids are all just out there on the right. So I go up, and I stop, and I hug them, and I talk to them. And then at a certain, like after 2 minutes of interacting with them, my daughter made a sign, "Dad, you're an iron dad," you know, and like, it was just so great. And at a certain point, I'm like, oh, I guess I got to go now. I guess I need to run now. I start running. Now, here's the thing. Running is my jam. So
yeah.
Running should be my easiest thing. And swimming is my hardest thing. And I did the swimming great. What I didn't know was, there's a couple of things I didn't know. I didn't know about foot powder. That's an interesting thing not to know about.
Wow. Wouldn't even
like I never that. I never get blisters when I run. Never. All of you're in the water for an hour and 45 minutes, and then the entire time you're on the bike, you're pouring water all over yourself. That water's going down your body, down your legs, and in your shoes. So your shoes and bike socks are wet for 7 hours.
Right.
So now it's been 8 hours and 45 minutes of wet feet, and now I'm starting a marathon. And I was doing the stop-start thing. There's no way I was going to run the marathon clean. I was doing like 3 minutes on, 1 minute off, or 5 minutes on, 1 minute off a walk or something like that. So, and for 2 miles, the coach came up and he's like, Sean, you are looking great. You're doing great. And then...
Was the coach really there, Sean, or are you just hallucinating at this point?
I might have been... No, I know he was there because he had a moped and he would almost crash into people.
Oh, okay.
He was like... He had all his athletes. He'd zip up and down the line, like, talking to his different athletes. Mm-hmm. And so he saw me a couple times, like, you're doing great. You look really, and he was a guy who doesn't BS you.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that part of his credibility with you is he tells you when you're doing crap.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's, you know, when you're going to be on, it was going to be at least a 5-hour marathon. That was pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're starting a 5-hour marathon, it doesn't, you know, it's, I don't know, but anyhow, so he was saying that to me, you're looking good. And then the sharp shooting pain on the bottom of the feet, like only 2 or 3 miles in. And it was because the feet had totally blistered. And when I say blistered, I mean between all the toes, all the way back and under the pads, kind of coming into an arrow down towards like the center of your foot, like bad blisters. So, and it was... The nerve endings on the bottom of my feet were totally exposed.
Wow.
So for 24 miles, every step of the run was excruciating.
Wow.
And but I didn't let on to anyone. Like the coach, usually my whole thing is I'm like an open book. I share everything with everybody. If I If I, you know, whatever happens, I get fat, I get skinny, I'm depressed, whatever, I just share with everybody. But I didn't share this with the coaches, and I didn't let on anybody because I realized that if I did, I would stop.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do mentally? Did you just sort of like go into a mantra, or did you just kind of drift off and think of something else? Or
when it got to mile 9, I thought about stopping.
Really?
And wow. I didn't seriously thought about stopping, but I was like, I cannot believe that I feel like this after only 9 miles. Because then you forget that you did the ride and the swim. Now you're just like, marathon brain kicks in, or at least mine did. And so, you know, if you're hurting at mile 9 in the marathon, it means you've been running a minute and a half pace faster than you trained at, right? You shouldn't be hurting at 9 miles. So, and I just kept thinking, my God, this is going to hurt. This is going to hurt. And really what I did was something that I had started to like talk about when I give talks, which is I'm choosing this. Like nobody made me do this. I had to bully my family into this. I'm the only reason this is happening right now. Yeah. I'm a narcissist. I'm an actor. You know, you usually find some way to be a victim. You know, it's like when Trump talks, he has a way of accusing you of something, but at the same time, he wants you to think he's a victim too. You're like, dude. But I realized like, I'm just going to smile. I'm just going to smile. And my smile is going to represent screaming to me. Every step that has a sharp shooting pain, I'm going to smile and be like, that's my pain. That's my pain. You know, like.
When you say you didn't want to tell them because you knew you would stop, you meant you would stop yourself or they would stop you? They would encourage you to stop?
No, I almost fainted a couple of times. I haven't told anybody this one.
Wow.
Yeah, there were times like 3-4 miles into the run where everything like started getting dark, like your peripheral vision started going, and all of a sudden the vision kind of went down into a binocular thing. And I was like, uh-oh. Slow down. I bent over, let the blood get into my head a little bit. You know, I could feel a little dizzy, a little nauseous. And I would laugh. I would smile. I literally physically smile like they're going to have to scrape me off of that. I'm not going to stop because of this. And I can't let on because it's not a joke. As soon as you look like somebody who's delirious, all of a sudden the NBC News camera is going to show back up because you have this tracker on you. Right. But, you know, I'm inching along and But if the only times they show up or if there's nothing else going on in the class, because I'm going so slow the whole way compared to most people. and they know the little bits they need for the show. But I'm like, if I'm nauseous or like, you know, going to pass out, that's when it'll show up. And then I'll bring extra pressure. So I just, you know, stand up and walk for a little bit and just walk straight, go through the aid station a little slower. They had these sponges that they put all over you that were so awesome, and the fans were just incredible, like the cheering crowds, and people had Goonies signs for me. And the funny thing is, you have your name on your bib. Everybody has their name on their bib, and this is a common thing now, but for some reason, I remember a time when this wasn't very common. And so people can be like, hey, Sean, way to go, looking great, you're almost there, man. You're like, I'm a mile and a half into this. I'm not almost there. Right? But they're calling you by name.
Yeah.
And because I'm recognizable, because I've been on the local news and the radio stations, and because they promoted me and everything else, and I'm like, you know, one of the corporate, you know, ambassadors of the thing for it, you know, that people are saying, hey, Sean. So for the first couple miles, I'm waving to people. I'm giving thumbs up. I'm doing my salute. I'm clapping back at them. I'm doing a little tip of the head and bow. And then I realized, like, by mile 3, I'm going to be exhausted from, I have to conserve energy.
I can't be saying
so I started conserving
people.
Energy, and I went into a mental space where people were cheering for me, and I wasn't looking at I wasn't acknowledging it. I do, like, a little head tilt, or a little eyebrow wave, or a little finger flick, but I couldn't entertain people. I had to keep moving forward. A lot of people would say, Goonies never say die. They had signs that say, Goonies never say die. Some people were dressed as Chunk.
Is that good or bad? Does that get into your head?
Well, this is my point, is that most of the time, I feel like the mayor. I'm like, tell fellow well met, shake hands, take a picture, you know, smile and everything else. But at this point, by mile three of this marathon, of this triathlon, I was sending out a signal with my face and my body that, like, I'm very focused right now. I can't acknowledge that. You know, you try. Someone run alongside you and ask you questions, and now you're either going to be a jerk or you're going to look over, hey, good to see you. Yeah, how you doing? Great, doing great. You know, and, like, my feet are about to explode. I might quit at any second, but doing great. Thanks for asking. The thing with me is, if I'm on a treadmill and training, or if I'm on a training run and I let some thought creep into my head about an injury, some work I need to do, you know, some kind of anything, if I let it get into my head, I stop. And once I stop, I'm done. I can't then talk myself back. I mean, I can, but I generally don't talk myself back into, you know, okay, I'm actually going to do 4 more miles of this training session now. I've done 2, but I quit. And what I was afraid of was, I know myself, and I know if people are putting the quit energy at me, they will, out of compassion, be looking at me as like, are you okay? They're implicitly giving you permission to stop, because they want to make sure that it's not dangerous for you to keep going.
Sure.
You know, there's on those runs, until you get 20 miles in, at 20 miles in, they're like, you keep going, you're never quitting now. You know, you're almost there. But if you're, you know, like Gordon Ramsay didn't make it.
I believe
he's a real athlete. Mm-hmm. I think he did it the year before in 14 hours. Or maybe even faster. He's like a real, and marathons. He does a lot of marathons and very, very good time. I think he's a 3 hour plus, like 3:20. I don't know his exact times, but he's a strong athlete. And I think he was overcome with heat and he was pushing it too hard. And I don't know the exact time they bailed out, but I think he was throwing up on the side of the road. And I think a couple miles into the marathon, he was pulled off the course is what I heard. So, yeah. And that sucked because he's awesome. He let me use his bike pump at the beginning, like at 5 in the morning when we first got there, 4 in the morning.
You didn't bring a bike pump, Sean?
I did not. That's reminds funny. Me of that. Okay, maybe that's a war analogy. Probably isn't a war movie analogy. Probably isn't good on this show. Well. So, he was nice.
By mile 20, you were feeling okay. You felt at that point you had it.
From mile 10, I knew I had it. Well, I knew I could physically finish it. But I didn't know about my time. It ended up being like a 6 hour and 10 minutes or something like that. It was a long time to be walking. It was a walk running. You know, I was, like I said, at a certain point, I was doing 30 30s.
Yeah, that's okay.
30 run, 30 walk, 30 run, right. 30 walk, 30 run, 30 walk. And they were really fast relative, you know, for me, they're really fast for the first 3 miles. And then they were, you know, so, but the weird thing is, at a certain point, there's this place called the Energy Lab, which is so perfectly named. It's actually a company that does, I don't know, solar roofs, solar panels, or some technology, whatever it is. But in the marathon, on the Queen K Highway, which, by the way, is like huge 18 wheelers going down there that are passing. When you're training on that, you get literally like blown 4 feet over when it goes by you. So you have to make sure you're prepared not to, like, it's really dangerous. But anyway, they're not there on the race day. So on the race day, you get to the Energy Lab and you make a left and you go down in, and I think it's 2 miles in and 2 miles out. And when you get 2 miles in, you're at mile 18 and they give you your special needs bag. I think 2 miles beforehand or 4 miles beforehand, I honestly can't remember right now, before you make the turn into the Energy Lab, no spectators.
Ooh.
And no spectators through the Energy Lab and back out until you get 4 miles out. So you're, whatever it is, you net like 6 hours, 2, 4, 6, maybe it's 2 miles beforehand, the 2, 4, whatever it is, 6 miles of it, there's no spectators. And by the time I'm out there, it's been dark for 3 hours.
So no one's out.
So you're now running in the pitch black, and this field is way spread out. I'll pass somebody, you know, you'll reel somebody in slowly over the course of 4 minutes. Somebody will pass you, and then it takes 3 minutes for them to be way ahead of you. But you're mostly at that point alone, and it's pitch black. And way off on the horizon, there was a storm. and there was lightning, and it looked like something out of Lord of the Rings. Like, it's a volcano, it's a storm, it's lightning. And so I would smile at that a little bit. But I actually like the solitude, because kind of what you were asking before, like, I don't feel like I'm on stage. I feel like I just get to relax and be myself and find the peace in running that I love. The reason that, you know, that today and for the last week or two since I've like started really running again, I have to keep telling myself is out there. The peace is out there. It's like, you got to go. You're not going to get to it soon. You got to be patient. It's out there. But at that moment in the triathlon, the peace was there. When I came out of the energy lab and I looked at my watch died. My watch died. And the watch had been giving the beeps every 30 seconds.
Oh, no.
So now I didn't have the beeps every 30 seconds. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to run to that cone and then walk to the next cone. I'm going to run to that cone and then walk to the next cone. And then I'd be like, I'm going to run 3 cones and then walk 1 cone. I'm going to run 5 cones and walk. And then I'd be like, okay, I got to walk 2 cones, you know. But I was playing that game with myself. And the coach had actually kind of prepped me for that. And normally I would have been really dejected about it. But at that point, you're just like, I'm alive. This is happening. You know,
yeah, just life get to the finish real. Line.
Yeah, and then Matt showed up on his bike. Paul showed up on his moped. Sarah Pompiano showed up. His other pro showed up. They'd come out. They'd ridden out, you know, a couple miles to cheer, to root me on, and to root for me and cheer me on. And it was very clear at mile 20. It's like, you are going to do this. You are like, you're going to. And I said to Paul, I said, am I going to be in the time? And I get the time. He goes, I don't know. Are you? I don't. My watch died, dude. Will you throw me a bone? Like, what time is it? And he tells me, and I'm like, yeah, I got it. And so I had joked with the Ironman people the day before, the PR folks. I said, I know what I'm going to do when I cross the finish line. Okay. And it's a big deal, because they'll say to you, the coach said, two of the most important moments, he said, are the 10 minutes before you start when you're treading water. And it seems like you're treading water forever. He said, you know, the dawn is upon you. They've got these tiki fires going. The Polynesian drums are going. He goes, you need to make sure you turn your body around and you look around behind you and see all those people and look at the mountains and drink it in and realize that, particularly if this is your first one, but like, this is a moment like no other in your life. And you better, it's one of the most special, special moments you can ever have. So take it in. And then he said, at the end, he goes, whether you do it before you cross or after, turn around and look back and realize where you just came from.
Wow.
He goes, realize what you just did. Not just the 26 miles, not just the 112 mile bike ride, not just the 2.4 mile swim. He goes, you know, the months of training, how many hundreds and hundreds of hours in a swimming pool and on the road. And before that, you're all the 10Ks you've run, all of that brought you to that moment. And you look back down that chute of where you came from, and you know you've arrived at a place that, you know, most people will never see in their lifetime, and no one can ever take it away from you. And so it's a big, some people, you know, make a fun of crawling across it. Some people, everybody's got their fun thing that they do. I said, I'm going to cross the finish line, to the PR people the day before. I go, I'm going to cross the finish line the way I normally cross a finish line of a 5K or a marathon. I'm just going to, you know, look down at my watch, close, you know, and then just breathe and smile and just walk through. And she goes, you better not. You better do something better than that.
We put a lot of money into
and
this.
I was like, come on, that's cool. That's a cool thing. She's like, no, do something. So, and the finish line in Kailua Bay is like nothing else in sport. The way they've got the stands set up, and the way they've got the lights, they've got these big, huge cranes set up with the lights, the music that they're playing. It's not that long. Like, you turn on to, is it Kailua Road? You turn on to whatever that leaky drive, I can't remember the name of it, but whatever that drive is, and it's only like a quarter of a mile long, but it's the sweetest sweetness, and you go running down there, and people are, it's the sound is so incredible, and you're running down, and I just, and now I'm running strong.
Mm.
I'm running like, you know, like everybody does. You know, crawl for 10 miles, sprint for 50 yards, and you cross the finish line. But I didn't want to do that. People have posted footage of it. You're like, oh, wow, you look good. You look good. Come across the finish line. I'm like, yeah, look, I felt good. But I just put one arm up, and I cross. And all I wanted, like, when I do marathons, what I really want is the medal. You do the Disney thing. Like, the characters are great. The people are great. The event is great. The setting is great. It's all just fantastic. The volunteers. It's all just fantastic. What I really want is the medal.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when I'm going to do a Disney run or any run, I look up, and a lot of times I'll actually put the medal as my screensaver, and for months beforehand, I'll be running towards the medal on my screensaver. And so, and that's it. You know, at mile 15, mile 18, which is where I usually bonk, I'm like, okay, I'm running towards that medal. I'm running, and when I cross the finish line, it feels good. But when they put the medal around and I glance down at it, I'm like, I don't know if it's I want to give it to my kids after I die. I don't know what it is, but like the medal is, I didn't even know what the medal was.
Oh, cool.
I'm getting ready to cross the finish line. I didn't care. All I cared about was Mike, I can't remember his last name, but who patented his trademark phrase from the first triathlon to now, every single person who's crossed it, you are an Ironman, right? So he got the whole crowd chanting Rudy, 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 which is like, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
But I just put my fist up there. I knew my wife and kids were on the other side of the finish line, and I heard him go, Sean Astin, you are an Ironman.
Oh,
I'm like, that is so badass.
So
I cross, and now walking, I'm limping. Like, I ran perfectly across the finish line, and they put the little macadamia nut things around me, a little necklace around me to hug my wife and kids, give them a kiss, take a picture, shake hands with Mike, see my my trainer was there. You know, it was great. And then we're going to walk, like, out of the chute, and I'm like, ow.
I have blisters.
And she's like, are you all right? And so I kind of, I'm rolling my feet onto the outside to try and, you know, like sleds, you know, put them on the outside. I'm like, I think I need to sit down and take these off. And I've been glancing down at my feet for 3 hours, seeing if blood was pouring through them.
Mm.
I fully expected, because there were times where all of a sudden there would be a squish. And I didn't know if that was a blister burp. Like, I didn't know what it was. And so we sit down and we take off my shoes. And my wife looked at it. And she just got like, it's actually kind of like a badge of honor. Like, when the look on her face was so horrified. And I was like, yeah. And the kids were like, oh, daddy, that's going to hurt. I'm like, yes, it is. So then we're going to go. We take a picture. I do like a little interview. And then we got in a room at that hotel, the one right at the start finish line. And we're going to go up to the room to get the stuff. And I'm like, I don't think I can walk right now. I'm like walking on my heels, like, you know, an idiot. And so my trainer guy, he grabs the, we get to the edge of the hotel. I get to the edge of the hotel. He grabs one of those baggage carts. And I sit down on the baggage cart, and he brings me up to the room in the baggage cart. And when we're passing people, I'm doing the papal wave. I'm like, hey, how you doing? They're like, hey. And they know. They're like, hey. And if they're coming towards you, I hold up my feet, and they're like, oh, right on, man. Right on.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was fun. And then the next day was just chilling by the pool. And the following day, I was back in L.A. shooting a movie.
Oh, wow. My gosh. You were able to walk the next day?
My character was a pilot in the chopper. Didn't have to move.
Wow.
Oh, good. Yeah, perfect.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I
brought, like, a cool little cane.
So, you know, I'm sure you've been asked this question 100 times. Would you do it again?
Absolutely. In a heartbeat.
Really? Wow.
What would you...
in a heartbeat.
What would you do differently training-wise?
Well, There's nothing so much as experience to kind of get you going. Like, now I've done it. Now I know I can swim. Now I know I can run. Now I know I can ride. I know I can do them all together.
Yeah.
So now I think I would be a little less stressed out. I think I would pick a goal that wasn't so, where there wasn't so much press and not enough time. And like what the coach would say to me, he goes, Sean, I would say we spend a year getting you down to the right weight, getting you from, I think I was 187 on race day, or 183, I don't know what it was, but I can't remember what I was, but he goes, getting you down to 160, but like the right 160. Let's spend 6 months doing that. And once you're there at the right rate and you've got a nice baseline, now let's train for 6 months.
Wow.
Right.
You know, not like, hi, nice to meet you, 4 months, go. Guy who's out of shape, go. You know, wow. So I think I would prepare better there. You don't have to have an elite coach like I did in order to get an awful lot of value out of talking to experts who do it for a living. Mm. Or do it for, you know, like it's, you really, 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 it's like anything, like golf, you know. If you're going to improve your golf game, if you want to go from a guy who shoots 85 to a guy who shoots in the mid-70s, you got to take lessons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've got the best in the world available to me. I think I'd call them up. I think I'd come up with some plan with them, get some guidance from them. I don't know if I would do ocean training. I think I'd probably want to do one that has a lake swim, mm-hmm. you know, or a river swim. I would do it like Santa Cruz. I would do Santa Cruz. The problem with me right now is I can barely run 3 miles right now.
Hmm.
I mean, I can barely run 3 miles. It's really, really sad for me. Sad for Shawnee Boy. I know I'm only 2 weeks away from being able to do a 10K without much problem because I'm always, it's always, you know what it was? The intention, the power of intention. And it's all a mental, it's all a mental game.
Mm-hmm.
All mental. Yeah. The whole thing is mental. Everything is mental. You know, if you want, when you realize that you're in touch with nature and you don't really need to look at a watch or you love your music and you just get lost in your music or you're feeling competitive, you want to improve your time. No matter where you are on the spectrum of that, when you're running, and it's the same for the other disciplines too, endurance disciplines, it's mental.
Mm.
It's either a focused front of your brain pinched kind of a focus, or it's a release, relax, let your full brain focus. There's like, it's all mental.
Speaking,
your body doesn't really.
No, you're absolutely right. But speaking of 3 miles, Sean, you have
If anybody's still listening to this, if anybody's hung in there for this long.
I was trying to think of. I was looking at myself. I got to figure out a good segue. But here's the segue, because you mentioned you can't run 3 miles, but we hope that a lot of people are going to be running 3 miles this
the other
coming
thing,
Saturday.
Like in between this coming Saturday is it's April 2nd.
Yep.
And it is the second. It's my second annual charity run.
That's right.
And I can't believe it. I can't believe how great Chris and Mindy. Chris and Mindy Prazier, he's a police officer. She's a coach at a elementary school. They're what we call, I guess the vernacular is an underserved community. You know, they used to say low income or something like that. And she started a couple years ago an after school running program for these kids. And they do their running and they'd have a ball. You know, they all of a sudden had a sense of community. They had, physical fitness. It's amazing what happens mentally for these kids. And she got them to go to Disney at one point. She got them to, they had a whole adventure there. It's just a really cool thing. So what we did was they really liked my run third idea. And my run third idea, just in 2 seconds, is I run first for myself, keep myself healthy and strong, mental health, hygiene, physical health, so I can be good for my family. I run second for my wife and kids, and then I run third for you. And it started as a hashtag on Twitter, hashtag RUN3RD. And I would run third. You know, my mom's not feeling well right now, so run third for my mom, or run third for my cousin, or run third for my, my dad who just got back from Afghanistan, or, you know, whatever it is, an idea, a place, a charity, a cause, whatever, you know, people that you love. And then when I run, I hold those dedications in my heart when I run. Well, Chris and Mindy really liked it. We worked together, and Mindy came up with a thing where she implemented it into her curriculum with her elementary school kids. So she got them thinking about self-esteem. You know, why is it important to take care of yourself? Like, you run for, so the first part is I run for me. I run for myself. And they would write little essays about that. And then they'd say, I run for my family. And they'd talk about their families and stuff, largely the Hispanic community. So, you know, I'll talk about their abuelita and stuff. And then they'd say, okay, now run third for someone else. Who else are you going to run for? And the kids would go back home, and then they go into the community. They go to stores. They go to wherever, and they would come up with these things, and then they would write on the back of their shirts, or they'd write these cards and clip them to the back of their shirts and say, "I run third for Uncle Tommy who's deployed." You know, "I run third for people with heart disease because my grandpa died from a heart attack." You know, whatever. And then so we raised $10,000 last year which was incredible for schools in the Mesa area school districts in Arizona. The website is Run Third 5K. You can actually just go to SeanAston.com and scroll to the bottom and just click on the it's very apparent. You just click on it, it'll take you right to the site to register. I may or may not be able to get there. I was supposed to be in Belgium. I just canceled a event to Belgium because of all the drama that's going on there, postponed it for a few months. And then, which is horrible to have to be affected in that way. But I may be able to get there. There's a family wedding. We'll see what happens. But either way, if I'm not there, what I have been planning was to Periscope it, do a Periscope where I run along. And we also, the most money we made last year for these kids, and it's kids all over, for these elementary after-school running programs, was through virtual runs. Yes. And I think virtual runs are getting more and more popular. You used to have to explain them to people. But the Run Third 5K, you know, last year we had all 50 states represented in the virtual run, and we had a bunch of countries. This year I haven't been able to do as much promotion for it, so it would be fantastic if your audience would just jump on to go to Run Third, go to SeanAston.com and click on the Run Third thing, and if they could do it, it would be awesome. We'd really appreciate it.
I think we had at least 50 people last year who did it from our running team, and Mike and I did it. But you have until April 30th to complete the run, so you don't have to do it the day of, right, for the virtual run.
Yeah, yeah, it's the spirit of the thing. Mm-hmm. You walk, run, you walk it, you take, add it up over time. It's really about helping get kids into running. And what it does is it creates a lifelong experience for them. I mean, everybody knows the first time they ran a 10K,
right?
And these kids, they train, they can do a 10K or a half marathon. Some of them, even they're little, they can do this. And if you take them, you know, they live in Mesa. If they go into Phoenix and they do a Phoenix half marathon, every time they drive to Phoenix for the rest of their life, you know, or if they take a trip to Disney, or if they go to wherever, they can choose. And if they have a little bit of money that can help with some transportation or some administrative stuff or shoes or uniforms or admissions or whatever, registration fees, like, it can help create for these kids a lot. And then they're runners.
Right.
Then they're runners. Instead of being kids who are looking for this or trying to do something else, they know that they can do that. Let me just read something to you. She said, run3rd5k.com is ultimately where you'll go. Mickey, M-I-C-K-E-Y, all caps, is good for $5 off.
Oh, good.
The virtual run can be run anywhere at any time between now and April 30th. For those in Arizona, come join us Saturday, April 2nd at Red Mountain High School in Mesa, Arizona. The expo goes from 7 to 10. They put on such a great little show. I mean, they do, for a 5K, for a startup 5K, it's as good as any startup 5K I've seen in not in a big corporate setting.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from 7 to 10 with vendors, raffles, silent auction. All raffle and silent auction items are listed on our website. 5K starts at 8 a.m. And then she put that last year we raised $10,000 for after-school running programs. That money supported 9 different schools. This year we have more schools on board, so we're able to impact more programs. On Facebook, I posted the kids' essays, which are so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
On Run Third, there's a Run Third Facebook group. I also did a post on other ways the money has impacted our program. It's amazing to see what these kids are getting out of the curriculum and experiences they're giving. They are given the opportunity to participate in. So that's Mindy. Great. Coach Mindy wrote all that. So you guys, I really appreciate. I haven't really been able to download in that detail to anybody. So you guys, what better place than my Run Disney family? You know, my peeps. Now, I haven't been to doing any Run Disney stuff.
Yeah,
they've been involved with
that. You're not even doing the Star Wars ones.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They're, like, totally involved in Star Wars right now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
At some point, they'll look up and they'll be like, Sean, you got to come back and do stuff. So, I've been out of it. I've been in a hiatus. That's a non-depressing way to call it. I've been in a hiatus. I'm out of the hiatus now. But I did one 5K, Disney 5K, a couple months ago. But I did it really under the radar.
Hmm.
My buddy who works there over in the PR department, he told me what was going on. And I just, like, drove down, jumped in the back of the pack, did the race, got in my car. Like, nobody knew I was there. Well, a couple of the people. Carissa and Rudy knew I was there because I waved at them when I went by.
I was
totally under the radar.
Wait, was this in January, Sean? Was this in January?
Yeah.
The Star Wars, the light side?
No.
No?
No. It was a weekend. Okay, when was Tinkerbell?
Oh, it was Tinkerbell, which was in
February,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Might have been Tinkerbell.
Wow, you are on hiatus if you don't know. Wow. Yeah.
No, I know. I've literally been out of the loop. But the gal who works with us that looks after the kids, she does them all. So I always get to see the medals when she comes home. And yeah, and I'm trying to get her to train a little bit. She just goes out and she pushes herself more now than she used to. But she doesn't even train. She's just doing it for the medals. I'm like, well, that's cool. But, you know, touch your toes once in a while.
We want to remind the audience to go to www.run3rd5k.com for information on Run Third. And Sean, I just want to say that your recollection of the training for the Ironman competition and that day was awesome. Yeah, I just can't get over the detail and how much you have convinced me I don't never want to do that.
Well, you can do a short one. Do the sprints.
Oh, the sprints.
You can do a sprint easy. Anybody can run a 10K or a half marathon can do a sprint. You do not have to do a full triathlon. The interesting thing, once you, then you're like, And the sprints are like a 100-yard swim and like a 26-mile bike ride and a 10K. You can do that.
But that mental piece that you were talking about, I think, you know, whether you're doing your first 5K, 10K, I know it does not equate to what you did for 15 hours, but when you were talking about the mental piece of it for me and the Boston Marathon, it was so similar. And not for as long as you were doing it, but, you know, everybody has their own things that they have to overcome, and, you know, it's different for everybody.
That was a good idea, though, for him to go after Dave McGilvery with the bike, because I think that was a good training. That's a very good way to kick off your training. Well, Sean, we want to thank you for coming on. We wish you the best of luck. We want you to get back into shape. We wish the best for your mom, and we wish the best for Run Third. We're looking forward to having our team members run it, and everybody out there who's listening, we want you to join in this great cause. We want the kids to get fit, and we want them to start on a life of fitness. So, Sean, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks, you guys. I really appreciate it. That was fun. I feel like it was cathartic.
We hope to have you on again sometime. Maybe sometime in the future. We'd love to.
I want to go to Paris. I want to do the Disneyland Paris. Maybe we'll do after that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sounds good.
There you go. So for Sean Astin, for Chris Aliopoulos, for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.